A Place to Heal, Saving Lives in Toronto's Toxic Drug Crisis, is a podcast by theferret.scot. It includes references to drug use, mental health, and suicide.
My name's Sarah Gregg, and we're standing at Queen and Sherbourne in downtown Toronto, outside of the Moss Park Consumption and Treatment Service.
I'm in Moss Park, one of Toronto's oldest working-class neighbourhoods, a mix of red brick and concrete high-rises. It's been at the centre of this Canadian city's toxic drug crisis, and it's also home to its first safer drug consumption site. In 2017, super-strength synthetic opioid, fentanyl, hit this city hard. It contaminated the drug supply and people started dropping. When city authorities failed to respond to calls for a safer drug consumption space, like those in Vancouver, volunteers in this neighbourhood stepped in. They gathered supplies and nurses and started reversing overdoses themselves in a tent in the park. Saving lives became an act of civil disobedience. And within months, the city had agreed to put in place a legal consumption space. Now Moss Park Consumption and Treatment Service is one of 10 in the city.
Should we go in?
Yeah, sure.
How are you, Uncle Tony?
All right.
Thank you, Evan.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Thank you. So this is the space.
I'm Karen Goodwin, a reporter for The Ferret, Scotland's investigative media co-op. This summer, Glasgow will be the first UK city to open a safer consumption facility. People will bring their own drugs and use them supervised by staff, able to respond immediately if anyone overdoses. Glasgow's version, run by an NHS and City Council coalition, is likely to be quite different from Moss Park's. But I wanted to find out more about the difference that a community focus makes. So I'm in Toronto to watch how this team saves lives and helps people heal.
Hi, come in.
Good.
Hey, how are you?
Not bad. You have a table?
This drug consumption space has been allowed to operate legally since 2018, and it's run by South Riverdale Community Health Centre. Up to 100 people a day come through these doors, and Evan is here to welcome the constant stream of people arriving.
My name's Evan. I've been working at Moss Park for maybe 4 years. I feel like I've been here forever. It's like a place where aspects of my own life and my own experience with substance use are an asset instead of something to, you know, to hide or to censor.
Hi.
If you're doing a shot, you can come in.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you doing?
He checks what they're using. Fentanyl users get priority because of the risks. Then he records their first name and age in the guest book.
Isn't always government name, it's what they're called in the community, and that's just so we can track individual visits. We just feel like it's so important to set a positive and welcoming tone at the door and to try to maintain that through the visit, just because in so many other aspects of people's lives, you know, they face all the shame and stigma, and they're, you know, drug use is still heavily criminalized and these neighborhoods are heavily policed. Anything we can do to make this a refuge from all of that, that's always a priority for us.
People here come to use a safer injecting space, but there's also health and wound care available from nurses Karen and Erin, and help with referrals to other services. About 90% of people using this service are homeless, living in shelters, hostels, in tents and alleys. But here, people are encouraged to take care of themselves, to nap on the sofa, to drink a glass of water, to take part in art activities, and of course, to eat a decent meal.
Don't throw the water at me.
And right on cue, the food delivery is here.
So I'm loading this cart like bales of hay.
Uncle Tony, as Sarah calls him, is often on hand to volunteer help, but he's unpacking the towers of food by tossing them to Sarah and Evan at lightning speed, as if they weigh nothing.
Now, why
crackers. Thank you, Uncle.
Whenever we get our harm reduction supply delivery, it's at the most inappropriate time, never with warning, and always three skids, like, as tall as me.
Thank you. I'll bring it around. Actually.
While Evan takes the supplies to the kitchen, Sarah guides me through to the main injection space.
Hi, guys.
Unlike many similar facilities, there are no booths here. Instead, five metal tables are arranged around the room, allowing people here to talk to each other and even help each other shoot up if need be.
There isn't a desk that staff sit behind. We intentionally sit throughout the room and sit with people so we can connect with people. And there's so many barriers already in the world. We're trying to minimize those visible barriers that others people, right? This isn't about us and them. This is about being in community together. But we do have this great big shelf that has all the harm reduction supplies that we use day to day. And then we also have oximeters that will measure someone's oxygen level when they're experiencing an overdose and when they're not. We try to move quickly to administer some oxygen. When things get really bad, or if it's a quick, hard overdose, sometimes people actually stop breathing altogether, and then we'll use airways, we'll use a bag valve mask, we'll do airway management to try to get them breathing spontaneously on their own.
The number of overdoses each day varies. Last month, there were about 50, with another 15 to 20 outside. Every one of those lives was saved.
Sometimes there's zero overdoses in a day. Sometimes there's 12 overdoses in a day. So it really depends, and it's really not predictable for the most part.
MK's life has been saved many times over, right here in this room. Today he's at one of the tables, prepping a shot of fentanyl. His story is a North American classic. He started using prescription pain medication, OxyContin, in 2008, moved to fentanyl and got hooked.
Fentanyl has very, very, very short half-life, so maybe every 3 hours you start to feel like you're ready for another one. By 6 hours you're feeling sick. The reason why I started was that warm hug feeling. It feels just like someone's giving you a big warm hug and all your worries are gone. You just feel at peace with yourself and you don't think about it. You're suppressing your feelings, but it's all, then you gotta deal with it. 10 times worse when you come back, right? Why would a man create something like this? It's evil. Like I said, I don't wish this addiction on my worst enemy.
He's been street homeless for 4 years now, and he's overdosed countless times. But here, he feels safe.
You're exempt from getting arrested while you're in a safe consumption site, so. It's good that, because I don't believe jail is any rehabilitation for anybody. If anything, it makes you a worse person. People need help.
Have you been in jail?
Everybody's been out here has been in jail in these streets. Guys or girls. The police department in this division, they're pretty tough.
Sarah has known MK since the early days back in the park. He's had periods of sobriety since. But it's not easy to see him like this. Every day when he leaves, she knows he's at risk.
It's hard, right? I don't like to see anyone in pain. And there's nothing I can do when people are in pain except for just to be there, right? Share space.
It's midday, and there's more people at the door now.
Hi, Mike. Come on in.
Mike arrives. It's his birthday today. Celebrating is so important here, so there'll be cake later and a dance party. You find the joy where you can. First, though, Mike needs to take a shot. Some people, says community health worker Heather McAlams, write people like Mike off and don't think they're capable of making changes to their lives. She thinks differently. And as someone who used drugs for more than 2 decades, she should know. Today she set up a table with a long piece of paper.
This is one of our many community arts projects. I like to do like poll questions and let the community just like draw and write on it as they go. Our question is, sky's the limit, unlimited budget. What would you like to see in the Moss Park site? And yeah, there's some really cool stuff. We got soft serve ice cream machines to drug vending machines to community run cafes, robotic jug machines, bidets and showers.
Heather says art projects like this are a way of ensuring that the community knows that this space belongs to them and that they have a say. Heather grew up in Moss Park. Now she's abstinent, using her own willpower rather than a 12-step Narcotic Anonymous program to stop taking drugs.
I used drugs for 21 years straight, and like, I got off methadone, and I'm like actually clean, and it's pretty fucking freaky that I did it, and it's pretty neat to like be a walking example. And I don't preach, I don't really believe in God, and I don't really, and I didn't 12-step, and I just like really think it's a unique thing for everybody, but like it's pretty neat to like be able to answer people's questions, like, and not be a doctor or not be someone in school that just be like, oh well, this is what really how it happened, you know what I mean? And this is, that feels pretty good. It feels pretty like full circle to like have come from where I did and then do that.
She says doctors wrote her off, and she sees them do it to others.
They would literally call me like a lifer and tell me like the statistical odds that I would ever not be like opiate dependent. And like, and these are doctors telling you this shit. So of course, how do you not believe that, right? Like,
she thinks people deserve choices, whether that's access to safer drug consumption sites, drug replacement prescriptions, therapy, or if they want to stop altogether.
I think they sell people short without like having the actual true knowledge of it themselves, right?
In the outdoor patio space, the sun is shining. Many of those gathered on the benches here have been part of the Moss Park community for years. They're reminiscing about the old days, swapping banter and tall tales. Sarah is not short of material.
So my good friend Ian was one of the people at Moss Park who would flail when he would overdose. So he'd go into this flail that would, like, he'd be writhing, twisting, vocalizations. And one day we were doing some mural painting, and this poor bastard landed in the yellow paint and was just twisting around on the floor. So he's covered in yellow paint. But then our other friend Slim was also a master flailer, and so he was on a flail in the bathroom. So I have two grown men that are twice my size flailing around the space. They both kind of come to at the same time. We take them out to the patio, and Slim looks at me, and he looks at Ian, and he comes up and he whispers, he's like, is it just me or is he yellow? I'm like, yeah, dude, he's yellow. He's just been rolling around in paint.
When I woke up the next morning at home, I looked down and I was like, what the fuck? And all my clothes was fuck. I was like, even my toes, my feet.
Crusted.
Yeah, because it was like, I had socks on, whatever. So my socks were fucking crusted with yellow paint. And I was just like, so the whole time I'm at home, I have no idea what the fuck's going on until I got here. And then I hear him the story from fucking
and
five,
that,
six different people.
That area was yellow for like
yeah.
a year, wasn't it?
The oxygen tank is still covered in yellow paint.
Yeah.
Really?
Texas is listening and laughing. But she has a sadder story to tell.
One day I woke up and I just couldn't walk anymore. And it took them 6 months to figure out I had an abscess in between my hip and my stomach that was the size of a grapefruit, and they needed to do emergency surgery because my intestines had ripped open. So it took them 3 months to do emergency surgery. And then me and my partner at the time got kicked out of his dad's house because he crashed my car and therefore lost our jobs. So we got kicked out and ended up on the street.
It was while living on the streets that she realised the tumour was coming back. At the hospital, staff didn't believe her. They said she was looking for drugs, and she never managed to see a doctor. The discrimination facing drug users trying to access healthcare is well documented. So nurse Erin Telegdi, who works in Moss Park, made a call, and Texas was finally admitted.
My partner wheeled me to the hospital from the site, and they finally admitted me. But me being me, I needed my people.
You can't take illegal drugs in most hospitals. Only one in Vancouver has its own safer injecting space. That means many people who need to use drugs just leave. So Texas went back to her shelter hotel, got high, and collapsed.
And next thing I know, I woke up in the ICU with 3/4 less a hip and part of my femur missing because the infection was so bad it went into my bone. I'm always in pain, like I can't walk. My right leg's like 2 inches shorter than my left leg. So, yeah, it makes everything hurt.
As we're talking, the siren outside becomes impossible to ignore. There's a whisper around the group. It's an overdose. Sarah grabs her kit and runs outside to see if she can help. By the time she gets out front, police and ambulance are already there. Texas and Ian are outside now too. They've heard the name of the man who OD'd and are worried they know him. They don't. Same name, different drug user. Still, Texas worries. It reminds her that she's not heard from her friend. Everyone here lives in the shadow of death. Also outside smoking is another Mike, a different one from before. He's been brought back from the dead too many times to remember, he says. Once, just as the indoor site was setting up, Sarah saved his life in a nearby alley. As he walks me to the spot, he points out the shiny new builds towering on the horizon with sky-high price tags to match.
Really, the look of the downtown, the core itself, has really changed in the last 10 years. Our city always just used to grow bigger in a circular way. Outskirts, outskirts, outskirts. Now we're at the point, the whole mission has changed in the last 10 years. It's about getting as many people down here and in these things as possible. Near the heart of the city, near everything, less driving, no commute. You know what I mean?
Average rent for a 2-bed apartment in Toronto is now £2,000. That's against an average wage of about $33,000. Every night, people fill the city's shelters and spill onto the streets. Like many people here, Mike has a long history with substance use that started with booze, moved on to cocaine and crack, before he discovered heroin about 20 years ago. That's no longer available here, so he does fentanyl. We turn a corner and he stops.
This is the alley, man. I was back here at the farthest end. This alley's like, what, 100 feet? These green bins. You sit behind them, a cop drives by, they can't even see you. And I sat down right here, did up a shot, and thought, oh, I better be careful. But unlucky, or lucky, depends how you look at it. The dope I got that day was like extra above ordinary grade kind of stuff. Like, on a normal day, I would have been like, yeah, right on, it's a good score, but yeah, it fucked me up. I did not even get to cap the syringe. Apparently I just went face down. Dude just happened to be walking by on the sidewalk at the end of the alley and he caught my fall. So he came over and then when he seen the rig on the ground and the cooker on the table thing and me on the floor on the face, he went right off, like right away. He knew where Sarah was setting up the site at Moss Park. I don't even know if it was officially even open. It was that close to her getting that address and out of the park and out of the trailer. And yeah, I was out about 4 minutes, 5 minutes. Like, about the time where you fucking stuff starts dying and going wrong on you, you know what I mean? I came to, everybody was happy, a couple of girls were crying. But like, that's guardian angel kind of shit, you know?
On my way back to the consumption space, I stop off at the park where the original unsanctioned site was set up 7 years ago to hear from one of the founders from those early days.
I'm Zoe Dodd. We are in Moss Park, which is where the first overdose prevention site in Ontario ever was. And we ran it illegally in the park for a year before moving inside with funding.
The park looks so different than it used to, she says.
This is a really nice park. It was a nice park. It was like there were a lot of trees and people would hang out here under the shade of the trees. So it was like the community's park. And there's a lot of hawks in this park. There's like a red-tailed hawk. That red-tailed hawk, the day that we brought the trailer in, was sitting on the side of the building watching us. When we had like this really hard overdose once, the hawk flew over and sat on a fence and watched us. And then when we got the person up, the hawk flew away. Like, so the park had birds and had this hawk. And yeah, it was like a sanctuary for people. And now it's just all construction. And the park is, half of the park is gone, fenced off, and they're building like a link for this, the new subway.
For some, sites like this made the area dangerous and encouraged tent encampments to form around them. Zoe saw it differently. Though people were in dire straits, in some ways they were safer here than they were in shelter hotels and hostels, where they died using drugs on their own. At least here, they were part of a community. She knows so many people who have died in this crisis. And grief, she says, is often a driving force behind escalating drug use. Indigenous leaders here, like Les Harper, who also works at South Riverdale Health Centre, helped people make some sense of that grief, reconnecting many here with their own culture of healing. About a third of those using Moss Park Consumption and Treatment Service are Indigenous. It's a community that has suffered from colonial policies of oppression for generations. Most recently, the residential school system saw Indigenous children removed from their homes and denied access to their culture. Many were mistreated or even died. That separation from their culture is what Les and others are trying to mend.
Yeah, Les was doing like healing circles and having like elders came out and like did these circles with everybody, and like it's true, like if we didn't have that support, we would have had nothing. Yeah, really benefited from that.
But Zoe is far from immune to this grief.
Here I am talking to you and I've found out today that my good friend has died yesterday of an overdose, you know, like we're not separate from what's happening. It's happening in our lives, it's happening here. That's what the driver is too for us. It's like hard, like I completely lost my mind during COVID because I just had enough of just witnessing so much social abandonment, watching people pass away that I know, and then like doing frontline work, I had to go off work because I ended up in the emergency department. And if I hadn't taken that time, I wouldn't be here anymore either. And that's like the toll that has taken on us. We've lost coworkers to overdose and suicide, and it's real, it's really real. I just didn't want to be here. And that's like how much grief just pummels you. And all this like violence that you're witnessing and you're just trying these interventions to save people, it's not enough because it's structural. And we need like housing, we need supports, you need a foundation to heal.
Earlier this year, a study published in The Lancet showed mortality rates in neighbourhoods within 500 metres of a safer consumption space were 67% lower than they would otherwise have been. But recently the backlash against them has intensified. In February, a class action lawsuit was filed against the South Riverdale Community Centre following the tragic death of a local mother who was struck by a bullet from a gunfight just metres from the Riverdale injecting site. Ontario's Health Ministry launched a review of consumption and treatment services in the province and put decisions on new applications on hold. Some resident groups and politicians say the approach of safer consumption sites causes dangerous incidents like this. Critics point out they haven't stopped the deaths. Concerns have been voiced that they enable drug dealing, organised crime and violence. Moss Park staff are devastated by the tragedy, But to them, it underlines other questions, like why housing, social security and mental health systems are letting their people fall through the net. Back at Moss Park Consumption and Treatment Service, it's evening.
We won't rush people out at the end of the night because if it's minus 30, if it's wet, rainy day, and people have been awake for 2 or 3 days in the same socks and haven't taken their shoes off, like, where does that happen? Right? Well, it'll have to happen here.
I'm in the office with Sarah and nurses Karen and Erin, grabbing some time off the floor. All three started as volunteers in the park, and they are the only three of the original team still here. This site exists, says Sarah, because it had to.
We couldn't wait any longer, right? We couldn't wait. And it was also a way to show city officials and others and the province and the country that actually we don't need anything fancy. We just need access to community, to oxygen, sometimes to naloxone.
We had a tent, literally, that would blow down in the rain. Two tents. Yes.
It would blow down. Yes. And I actually missed those days, because some days you'd go into to work or to volunteer at that time, and you'd have mud up to your knees, mm-hmm. right, or snow up to your knees, or...
Yep. And we'd be cracking like the hand warmers to put on people's arms to warm up their veins enough they could find them, and people would have an overdose and roll out of the tent sometimes, and you'd be rolling with them.
Like, but also while looking at the stars and being part of kind of that bigger picture.
Those early days are part of their DNA, a time of both a deep sense of purpose and profound grief. But when the service moved indoors, the deaths continued to rise. In 2020, most services around them closed down in the pandemic. They did not. That year, 539 people died of overdoses in Toronto, the majority of them in the downtown areas around Moss Park. 94% of those deaths were linked to fentanyl. Here's Sarah, trying to explain what that was like.
Like, it was a slaughter, a decimation. Dozens of death notifications a week is not normal. And experiencing more death, you know, in a short period of time than most people experience in a lifetime, like, that's not something that I expected. Even knowing that the overdose crisis was starting to ramp up, never did I imagine. Most of us that work here happened upon dead bodies just coming to and from work. Finding people who you thought were dead and you were able to bring them back to life because they were crammed beside dumpsters or in the middle of the road or like in porta potties. Like, we saw these humans with their own eyes and felt them with our hands. And in some cases, we breathed air into their mouth as strangers.
Karen was also unprepared.
I'd been doing street related healthcare for a number of years. I'd seen people die with violence, with lack of housing, with alcohol, crack, whatever, but I had never seen this level. And it was like, you didn't know at the end of the night when somebody said, be safe tonight. It suddenly took on a whole different meaning because they might not actually be here tomorrow. That might be the last good night. The need to be really kind. The need to not escalate things when somebody came to the door so that they, to make their visit as good as possible so there was no reason to turn them away, because if they overdosed outside and died, then we lost them.
Karen still can't answer her phone when it rings. People text or message, she says, but when they call, it's because someone is dead. But she keeps going.
Every time I think that everybody I love is dead, I discover I've fallen in love with another human being that walked in the door. Because they're quirky or they're annoying as anything, but they get their hook into my heart. And I start again.
The people coming to Moss Park Consumption and Treatment Service are not just clients or service users. They matter here. Erin remembers Damien, a former community member with chronic issues with lice. Staff understood it was difficult for him to take a shower, for whatever reason. There was no judgment.
Like, he wasn't, you know, easily trusting of folks, understandably. But when he started to feel comfortable here, like, he was the fucking sweetest human being. And he, like, the kindest human being. Like, he was always, like, buying ice cream and he wanted to share it with everybody. Like, he just had the purest heart. And I remember we were, like, planning for months to try to get him up to another community health center to have a shower and do, you know, like a scabies treatment, a lice treatment. And it was just becoming this like protracted thing, but we just kept at it. Then like the day came and he was like, okay, I'll go. And I went with him up to the community health center and I did his laundry while he was taking a shower. And then I helped him put like the lice treatment in his hair. And all in all, it was like almost a whole day that we spent together. And he, died of an overdose a couple years ago.
There's so much heartbreak in this work, but so much reward too. It's not a one-way street, and staff say they receive care as well as giving it. This culture of reciprocity means everyone here is part of the Moss Park community. They understand and trust each other, so they've developed their own practice. There are no security guards. No one is barred, just asked to come back tomorrow. Coffee runs include drug users, and oxygen is used to treat overdoses wherever possible. In most places, including in Canada and the UK, opioid reversal drug naloxone is the go-to response to an overdose. It saved countless lives. But it also means people go into immediate withdrawal and, says Sarah, are more likely to put themselves in danger as they urgently try to redose. So here, they administer oxygen first.
We understand what it is for people to hustle, to make money, to keep themselves well when you have to redose every couple of hours with the short life of fentanyl. And you have to do that over and over again to stay well. I am not going to try to fuck up your day because I'm afraid of how to handle this overdose without using naloxone, right? That said, it is better than dead. And if you don't have any other equipment at hand or other ways to reverse overdoses, then you should absolutely use naloxone. But I think with medical professionals and hospitals and different things, we don't talk about the harm with the overuse of naloxone, right? And I think that's the next part of our conversation is that as we've gone through this many years now, we've learned a lot through trial and fire, you know, and like we are the experts when it comes to this stuff. We are part of community and we have heard from people, we've heard with people, we've tried it all, and we kind of know what we're talking about at this point.
So much of what happens here is about helping people let go of the old stories and find the new. That's the treatment on offer, says Sarah.
I see it every single day that I'm here over and over again, that people are replaying scenarios from childhood that they're trying to reconcile, right? If you have a disorganized attachment, an unhealthy attachment to your caregiver, to your primary caregivers from when you were children, you will replay those scenarios over and over in every interaction, your entire adult life, until you can correct it, right? And people are looking to be proven right. They're looking for someone to let them down. They're looking to be cast aside. They're looking to create that same scenario that interrupted their growth and development sometimes. So in here, you know, we've got a lot of aunties, we got a lot of uncles. Why? Because we are, you know, filling those gaps for people so that they can try to reconcile, you know, those disruptions in their development and you know, in their relationship building, right? And that's part of this relational practice, right? People need love and connection and community to thrive in this world. So that's what we're doing here. We're in it for the long haul, right? We're interested in the incremental changes because it is a long game. And you add up all of those incremental changes and we've got, you know, a pretty well person.
So every day they go forward, honouring the dead and learning from the living.
I have so much love and thanks in my daily life for people who taught me how to do this work, but also taught me how to be a good nurse and taught me how to be a better human, who aren't with us anymore. And yeah, I carry that with me every day.
Let's not forget the people, right? It's Chris and Steph and Wink and Randy and Slim, and it's like real human beings. Let's not forget them. Let's not forget their names. Let's not forget their faces.
We're all carrying them all the time and sharing memories and continuing on the work that they started. We're doing that every day.
Hi, Vincent. Come on in.
It's been about like this.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, no major trouble, no crazy events.
Nothing so far.
This podcast is written, recorded, and produced by Karen Goodwin for The Ferret. Additional editing and sound design is by Alan Bryden. Deep thanks go to everyone in the Moss Park community. This podcast is dedicated to the people they've lost. If listening to this has left you wanting to help, there's lots that you can do. But as a journalist, I'm not the right person to tell you what. So get informed. Contact your local homeless organisations, tenants' union, or drug activist group, and find out what they think. If you need help or support for your drug use, you can contact wearewithyou.org.uk. Or if you need someone to talk to, contact thesamaritans.org or call 116 123. Please support our work by becoming a member or giving us a donation at theferret.scot. And please share this podcast and leave us a review. It really does help.
Hi, I'm Texas and I approve this message.